He's from Houston. And he will give me an account of some of his childhood days.
I used to love to spend my vacations between school terms with my grandparents. They lived out in the country about 12 miles from Caldwell, Texas, which is in Burleson County. I recall so vividly sitting on the porch in the evenings with my grandparents, and I would always ask my grandfather to sing a particular song that he, with much difficulty, finally succeeded in teaching me. It went something like this. Oh, Uncle Ride went downtown to buy Miss Mousie a wedding gown. Come a kimo, kimo, nero, doco, toro, and strength, and a dimmy day by the baboon drake, dump on a man a kimo. I recall living in Victoria. That was my birthplace. And I remember my dad, who worked for the Southern Pacific Railway for so many years that they finally retired him. I recall him telling me of a train wreck that they had close to Victoria many, many years ago. I think it was even possibly before I was born. Seems as though there was a cow that got on the track, and as the train came on, I suppose that the engineer or a fireman or both thought that the cow would get off, but the cow did not get off, and the engine struck the cow, and in some manner the cow's horn derailed the engine, and when the engine turned over, of course, the engineer was still in the cab. The fireman had presence of mind enough to jump, but the engineer did not. And when the engine turned over, all the live steam poured out on him as he was pinned under there, and one of his hands was sticking out from under the cab. He was still very much conscious and screaming in pain. And one of the men caught hold of his hand to see if he could pull him free at all. And in doing so, of course, you know, engineers in those days, I don't know whether they still do or not, but they all wore gloves. And in taking hold of the man's hand to see if he could extricate him from the wreck, he pulled the glove off, and when he did, all of the skin came off of the man's hand, just nothing but bone practically left there. And he was still screaming and saying, please, somebody do something. He says, under my seat in the cab, I carry a 45. He says, please, somebody get that and give me one shot in the head. All the men were there. All of them knew how to use a gun. But who would do it?
Who did it? Nobody. Well, did they ever get him out from underneath the cab?
Oh, no, he died.
He died just from being crushed by the cab.
You know, I often think about that. When people say, oh, yes, I'm for capital punishment. You bet I am. But if the person who says that had to press the button, would they do it?
Probably not.
Before it provided the other fellow does.
Now you were a dentist. Did you tell Carol to tell me about some of the earlier dentist tools and
Well, when I was in dental college, I graduated in 1931.
Where did you go to college?
Texas Dental College in Houston. And the first year I entered dental college, we had to use the old foot engines. We weren't electrified yet, but thank goodness the second year I was there, we were electrified, and we no longer had to stand there and pump and pump and pump as though you were pushing on a treadle machine, sewing machine, let us say, in order to prepare teeth for fillings or bridges or whatnot. It was very tiring and distracting work to have your foot constantly moving up and down to perform your duties.
After you graduated, you took up practice in Houston.
Oh yes, I practiced in Houston. I started in Governor Sterling's building. It was called the Sterling Building at the time. I think it has since been sold. I don't know whether it, I think it's changed names now too. And I practiced until World War II, and then volunteered to go into the Air Corps. And after I got into the Air Corps, well, I found out that the field to which I was assigned did not even have the dental plumbing into the clinic at the time. So since we were right on the border at Eagle Pass, which is across from Piedras Negras, why, all of the dentists spent quite a bit of time over in Mexico. We had a standing joke among us. We said we had so much foreign duty, our duty on foreign soil, but we didn't get paid for it. So, after spending several weeks in Eagle Pass with an unfinished dental clinic, I decided to alleviate the matter as best I could. So my commanding officer gave me a army ambulance and a driver and a helper, and we drove 365 miles from Eagle Pass to Houston and loaded my dental equipment, and 365 miles back to Eagle Pass. Used my dental equipment for many, many months before they finally obtained enough dental equipment from the government to fully supply the clinic. I had quite an experience with the upkeep of my dental equipment at the time. It was broken up hither, thither, and yon at various times, and I often thought of me volunteering my dental equipment free gratis, when at the same time I could read in the paper where a senator in Washington had a rent house, and it was on a corner where they didn't have any mail storage facilities. So in order for the government to deposit mail sacks on the little side porch of this senator's rent house, he was charging them, I forget how many hundreds of dollars a month, just to use the little porch to put the mail sacks on. Well, there I was standing up there furnishing dental equipment, getting it all torn up, all free gratis. An old Army sergeant told me one time, long time ago, he says, "Boy, when you get into service," he says, "don't never volunteer for nothing."
That's a good policy.
Leave that place.
So to expand on the aid that you were given, such as nurse.
Oh yes, that was a real interesting experience. The dental personnel that we acquired almost every week.
Somebody new.
Yes, a new one to try to break in. Imagine now taking one of the private's wives into the dental clinic and trying to introduce her to dental procedures, and trying to get her proficient in a week. Why, dental assisting is something that you could spend many, many months on, and get all the basic factors down. And then as soon as you went to work for another dentist, well, he would have you possibly do it in a different manner to suit him, don't you see? So anyway, I had a new dental assistant, and the second morning she came to work for me, I was trying to show her how to place her thumb underneath the incisor tooth and with her forefinger on the labial or lip side of the incisor tooth where I had placed a porcelain filling. You have to hold a celluloid strip on the porcelain filling for at least 5 minutes while it is, until it is thoroughly set before the strip can be removed. So I told my new assistant to place her thumb just as I had mine underneath where my thumb was, and then to place her finger on top. And after I was assured that she had a good firm grip on it there, I said, and be sure, regardless of what happens, don't turn loose of that until I tell you. And I will tell you in 5 minutes to do that. So she said, okay. So she was holding, and I was doing something around my dental cabinet there, and I just happened to look around after about 3.5 minutes had elapsed. And she was reeling just slightly from side to side as though she was going to faint. So I said, are you ill? And she said, shook her head, no. And I said, well, do you feel faint? And about that time she shook her head maybe a couple of times, yes. And I said, well, just lie down on the floor. So she did, rather abruptly. And after we brought her to, I began to question her about whether she was subject to these morning dizzy spells, or whether she had ever experienced such before, or just trying to get to the bottom of the case. And no was all the answers I could get. So I finally said, well, what did you have for breakfast? She said, I don't eat breakfast. I said, uh-oh. I said, if you're going to assist me from now on, you're going to eat breakfast. So she did, and we didn't have any more trouble.
Breakfast to start the day off right.
Not only breakfast, but the right kind of breakfast. Now, I don't consider breakfast to be a donut and a cup of coffee. Not by any means.
Okay. What about the cleaning of the dental office?
You mean the personnel that we had to clean the dental office? Well, that always been one of my sore spots. We had boys that, privates that were probably just off the farm in the last month, and they would be assigned, you know, to be janitors for the clinic or help here or there as they were told to do. So I had the sad experience of having one that thought his method was just as good as the method we were trying to teach him. For instance, the foot control pedal that is attached to the dental engine, it has to be, it's much easier to place that on the foot of the dental chair so it can be swept or mopped under around the chair, you see, without having to move and remove that foot control piece. So I told him to always place it on the footrest on the dental chair. So invariably, every morning when I would come in, that footrest would be placed right in the middle of the seat of the chair. And that in turn created a big dent right in the middle of the cushion of the chair, which was another quick deterioration of my dental equipment that I had so graciously loaned.
Did you ever have to strap anybody down inside a chair?
Never.
Did anybody ever swallow any of their teeth?
Swallow any of their teeth?
Yes.
No, I don't recall that. I can tell you something that happened in my dental office, though, when I was, I hadn't been practicing too long. When I had a funeral director come in, and he had a tooth, a front tooth, an upper incisor, that had to come out. It was just gone beyond saving. And he said, that was about 3 days before he had a funeral that he just had to be there to be sure that everything went right, you know. And I said, oh, that won't be any problem. I said, we'll take the tooth out the same day that you come in. I'll put you in another tooth on what we call a little thumb bridge to stay up there, you know, for looks. And he said, well, all right. So I took the impression and made the thumb bridge. And he came in about, it was about 2 hours before the funeral was supposed to take place, before he had to direct it, you know. And so I took the tooth out, his tooth out, and then I put the little thumb bridge in. It was just a little bit tight around one tooth on one side. And so I had to go to my lab to take off just a little bit and polish that so it'd be real smooth, you know, and not be an irritant to the tongue. Because since it's sitting right up there, yeah, and your tongue has to play across the lingual surface of your front teeth to enunciate clearly. So I took that little bit off that where it was binding too much, and then I was polishing away on it on my dental lathe. That's an engine that has we have a rag wheel on the dental lathe, and then we have a chalk with water put in to make a paste, and with that we put a little chalk on the rag wheel and then hold the appliance that you're going to polish against that to give it a high, fine, smooth polish, you see. And I was polishing away there, and I forgot to mention, I was up on the 10th floor of the Sterling Building, and I had my window backed a bit. That was the bad, sad thing to do. I shouldn't have done that. Shouldn't have had that window cracked a bit. Because as I was polishing, one of the little prongs on this thumb bridge caught on that rag wheel, which was going around at quite a rate. And the first thing I knew, it boom down my hand, and boom, and 10 stories down, it hit the street, I presume, because I've never seen it again to this day.
There was no screen on the window.
No screen on the window. And there was my funeral director sitting in the chair, patiently waiting for that thumb bridge so he could go direct this funeral that we had discussed, and everything was going to be okay, you know, 3 days early. But to this day, I've never seen the thumb bridge, and I've never seen that mad funeral director either.
Oh, he got mad.
Oh, did he? Well, he had every right to. It was my fault. As I say, I hadn't been in practice very long, and that's one lesson I learned. Always close your window when you polish something.
What about little children? Did you ever have much trouble with them and entice them with lollipops and so forth?
No, that's one thing a dentist will never do, is entice anybody with anything that contains sugar.
Well,
I
thought they always did.
No, MDs.
MDs.
Not dentists.
Oh, I thought I was down there wanting Kingsville, and I was a little boy as he came out. Well, maybe his mother or somebody had the dental work done, but the receptionist handed him a little lollipop.
Can't imagine. Can't imagine. True, I can't.
But yeah, that means being a good little boy.
Mm-hmm. But I can't understand a dentist that would presume to be taking care of anyone's teeth, and handing him a lollipop. In other words, here, make some more cavities for me real fast so your mama can bring it back in and we can have some more. You know, if a person would run this through his spine when he's eating all this sugar, say for instance he's got a Snickers, well now what do they cost? 10 or 15 cents, used to be a nickel. All right, if you would consider how much sugar and how much detriment that's going to do to the teeth, and add that on to that Snickers or whatever it is, Mars or long piece of peppermint candy, which is nothing but sugar, if you would just add on the dental cost that that's going to that, instead of saying, Mama, can I have 15 cents for a candy bar, instead of let them say, Mama, can I have a dollar and a half for a candy bar, what would she say?
Yes. Trouble making house calls, or was that before your time?
Dentist making house calls?
Yes. Oh, they...
I have made a few on occasions where a person was bedridden. And under those circumstances, in fact, the MD's wife with whom I shared the reception room when I first started practicing dentistry had cancer of the spine, and she was bedridden, and I used to go out once a day and brush her teeth thoroughly for her because she just couldn't do it.
About the old joke about the dentist pulling out with the pliers and so forth. You really good dentist jokes?
No, I don't know any good joke about that portion of it. See, so many people think that all you have to do is just get a hold of the tooth and start pulling, which is as false as you can get. You don't do that. First thing you do is to go the other way when you're taking out teeth. Say, for instance, taking out an upper front tooth, you would just get a hold of that tooth and start pulling. You would first try to push up on the tooth and then rock it from side to side, or round and round, and then forward and back, I mean to the labial and to the lingual side, and then it would just probably just slip right out. But you just get old tooth and give it that, you're not going to get anywhere, unless it's a baby tooth.
So you're retired now, right?
Yes.
What do you do most of your time now?
Most of my time now?
Yeah. You read quite a bit, I know.
Well, my wife passed away in 68, so I do read quite a bit. I don't watch too many television shows. I watch all football games. I don't miss one if I can help it. And watch the World Series. But as far as just sitting in front of television all day, I don't. I have about at the present moment two my pet programs are Sanford and Son, which I try not to miss, and All in the Family.
See, you don't have no discrimination.
No. But I tell you, it takes quite a bit of time. I still have my home in Houston, and it takes quite a bit of time to take care of the yard and just everyday living. Requires more time than I can find.
About what time period were you living and practicing in Houston?
From 1931 till 68.
Because Houston really expanded from 31 to 68 during that time. Really
in every direction, including up and down.
In industry and road-wise and so forth.
Industrial, road-wise. Large companies, oil companies, oil tool companies, construction companies, any kind of chemical companies that you can think of.
That laughing gas.
I never used it.
You never used that?
I never used it. When I was practicing there in Houston, I was just two doors down from a dental surgeon who did nothing but extraction. In other words, he's an exodontist.
Exactly, what was that laughing gas? First time I ever heard it was Daddy talked about it. Why do you call it really laughing gas?
Because that is the sensation that a person experienced so often. When they got enough of that gas, it just put them in a hilarious mood they were not conscious of.
Well, then how could the heck could you pull their tooth?
It was when they was coming out.
When they was coming out.
From under.
You would pull the tooth then?
No. We had already taken the tooth out, but as they were
coming out, they'd start laughing.
Sometimes, before they would get into deep enough anesthesia, they might experience some laughing there.
Well, do you have any further comments on your career as a dentist?
Well, I enjoyed it. I would do it again.
Did anybody ever bite your finger?
No, not enough to cause any permanent damage, let's put it that way. I've had a couple of kids that did try out one of my fingers a time or so, but nothing of any consequence.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Mr. Dr. Pooh, for your interview and your time.